you know, we're the ones that keep it wicked. Rock and roll, all good, mix it up, that's my ticket. Cruising in my Cadillac Escalade.
Good evening and welcome to episode 47 of the Deck Tees podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. I am Erin Campbell. This past weekend, there were two large Magic events taking place on opposite ends of the country. I was lucky enough to attend one of them, and my amazing guest was lucky enough to attend the other. Here with me tonight is Dave Durfington Lee. Hello.
How's it going, Erin? You have some very flattering words for me.
I do try. You know, I try not to invite people on my show that I have nothing nice to say about, because that would be really awkward. Like, I just can't do that. But so Durfington, is it?
Yes, it is.
How do you get a name like Durfington?
Well, when you grow up with the internet, you know, you go through phases of having online names. So when I got my very first email address, a Hotmail address, I said, what's the coolest name I could think of, me being, you know, 12 years old at the time? I was like, oh, I was reading this, like, Wildcats. I don't know if you know the comic. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And then they had this one. There's this Black Ops team called Black Razor. It's like, oh, this is a really cool name. I'm going to take this name, Black Razor. So my first email address was blackrazor@hotmail.com. And I use this name for years and years until I'm like maybe like, you know, 17, 18. And I'm like, okay, you know, I've grown up a bit, but not that much. So I should probably change my name. So this is a point where I changed from the phase of being super cool, you know, super cool nerd, to being more self-deprecating. It's like, okay, I'm going to change my name to Durf, because Durf is, you know, it's a very derpy name. So I was like, I'll pick Durf, because no one's going to make fun of me, because I'm already making fun of myself. So I'll pick Durf. But the thing is that a lot of people had the same idea as me. Mm-hmm. So whenever I tried to register a name anywhere, there was always someone who took that name before I could. So I'm like, okay, I need to figure out something new that's kind of along the same lines, but no one else has taken. So I don't know if you've ever watched Scrubs. It was a show that was on a long time ago. There's a running joke about one of the characters, Turk, being called Turkleton by one of the other characters. And so, okay, maybe I should try this. So I just changed my name from Durf to Durfington. So it gives it a little more of a regal air, I guess, which kind of, I don't know, plays off the derpiness of the name. I don't know. So I don't know, it's not that exciting of an origin story, but, you know, that's where it comes from.
It's kind of funny. I can relate to having names that evolve. Because I remember when I first started getting on the internet when I was a teenager, and I remember I didn't have the internet at my house, so I had to get on at the people who I used to babysit for his house. And I was really big into Batman, the animated series, especially Poison Ivy. So all my online screen names, I was like 14, it was Poison Ivy 63 or Poison Ivy, you know, 256 or whatever. So everything was Poison Ivy. And then as I got older, I kind of hit like my feminist stride at like 18, and I was like, I don't want to be just sexy. I want to be strong. So then I was really big into Final Fantasy. So then one of my favorite characters was Celas from Final Fantasy III.
Yes, yes.
So I was General Celas 52, and like, you know, General Celas 743, and I was into that for a while. And then, you know, the names kind of evolved from there. And then I played World of Warcraft for a long time, and my character's name was Estrus. I was a Tauren druid, so for a long time people called me O, because nobody could pronounce Estrus. So O became my name for a while, and then I was a member of Elitist Jerks, and I got my Estrus email account, and I made a Twitter name, and I was Estrus on there. So yeah, it's kind of funny how I went from being, you know, a really sexy Batman character to a giant cow, or to heat, basically.
Well, there are a few things. Like, the first, now I know how to pronounce your Twitter name. So I was looking at that, I was like, is it OE? Like, I'm not even going to try this. I'll just wait till someone else pronounces it and pretend that I know it all along. And then I was also playing World of Warcraft. I played for maybe 1 or 2 years, but I played way, way back. It was like the original World of Warcraft, like no expansions, nothing. Mm-hmm. And I did the same thing with my name, because I was probably like in my early 20s at that time. And so I picked the name Tachikoma from Ghost in the Shell, like one of the two newer series, which is the name of like a little sentient robot that has like a child's voice and just goes around, just, you know.
It's not a cool name. Can you do the voice?
It's like, it kind of talks like this, you know, but in Japanese. We start philosophizing about existentiality and stuff like that. But yeah. Where was I going with this? Yeah, it's just like it's just the first time, like, in the past, like, even 15 years, where human beings start taking on these names, I guess, like these really weird names. I guess maybe way back in the medieval times, like, knights had their own names and titles and stuff, but like you have regular people picking all these weird names because they have these attachments to these things. And when you're 11, 12, 13, you don't know any better, and you pick like weird names like, Silver Dragon Knight 72,000 or something like that. And then as you mature, like your identity changes as well. So I find that pretty fascinating.
It's also weird how you really do take on those names. Like for a long time, people knew me as just O, just O. And even my ex-boyfriend at the time, we used to raid together. And there'd be nights where he would be like, "Hey, O, are you hungry?" And I'd be like, "It's weird." And when people would call you by your real name, I would sort of have to look around. Like when somebody would say, "Hey, Aaron, it's good to see you," I'd be like, "Who are they? Who's oh me, got it." And it's weird because when I started getting into the magic community and I realized that people in magic don't really go by screen names, that it really is your real name, it took me a while to even get used to saying my own names. I got so used to opening my show with Estrus, and people in magic found it very strange. They didn't understand why I wasn't Aaron Campbell. And now my WoW friends sometimes don't get it, where they'll see me tweet and they'll be like, "There's this really funny girl, Aaron Campbell. She says everything you say. And she looks like you, O." And I'm like, "That's me, guys." So it's interesting how the different communities, refer to each other and how there's, that disconnect there where, if you say somebody's real name in WoW, everybody stops and wonders who that is. And then if you say a handle in Magic, it doesn't really connect.
Yeah, no, like there definitely is still that disconnect. Like when I'm at the local store, like people will still call me Dave because that's how they know me. Like it's people who probably know me, who are probably following me on Twitter and are also local people, they might call me Durf or whatever. But like, it's you don't really go to a local store and like see like a pro or whatever and then call him by like his Twitter handle. You know them by their name. And it's, yeah, I think still like Twitter, like the online community, like especially Twitter, is like it's very, I guess in the larger scale of things, it's probably a little more isolated compared to like the greater magic population at large, where it's still like very face to face and not really related to like Twitter names, Twitter handles, things like that.
Yeah, I'm still very possessive of my name too. Like even though I don't play World of Warcraft anymore, obviously the letter O is a very common letter, and I still follow a lot of my WoW friends, and every once in a while they'll talk to somebody who has an O name, and I'll catch them and they'll be like, "Hey, me and O are gonna go run a 5-man." I'm like, No. I'm O. That's Ovatos or whatever. You're running a 5-man with him." And I'm still very possessive of my handle, and if I were to ever catch somebody, using my name, I would still it's mine, and I still have an attachment to it, and I probably will, even when I'm not playing Magic anymore. And that's another thing is I don't think you ever really shed those ties to something. When you make it yours, it will always be a part of you.
And there's a funny side story. When I was in university, I used to break dance. I used to be a b-boy like a long time ago. Not that long ago. Maybe like I probably stopped maybe like 3 4 years ago. But there's a kind of a tradition where you like a lot of b-boys have names. Like they're given like nicknames, and that's the name they use when they go into battles or competitions or things like that. And in local scene, if there's someone else who happens to have that same name, you have to battle each other for the right to keep that name. So like it's a very competitive culture, but it's also like it just emphasizes the attachment that people have to their names, right? It's like if you want this name, you have to literally fight for it. Not like punching, kicking, but like you have to dance for your name. You have to put it all out there, right? Because that's your identity. And it's one of the, I guess it's one of the greatest things you could fight for,
Now I kind of want someone to steal my name. So I can just be like,
right?
we're gonna have a heel off or
So
something.
you gotta step up and take what's yours.
Lip sync for your life or something would be awesome. So now, Durf, you're pretty much, as far as I can tell, you're most well known for being the guy who does a lot of the art for Mana Deprived. You've made the avatars for the A Team. If you go on the A Team site and you see, the little KYT and the Scotty with the number one dad, you did that. How did that relationship get started with Mana Deprived?
Yeah, it's a long story. It started way back in, I think it was probably 2009, 2010. I had just got started on Twitter at the time, and I'd also just gotten back into Magic. I quit around high school, which is probably around Odyssey block, and I largely stayed out of the game all the way until M10 came out. So I was out for a long, long time, and I hadn't been like I'd been drawing some during that time, but I wish I'd been drawing more. So I started to get back into drawing, and then I started drawing magic things. They're just right now, like at the time, they're just illustrations. You know, they had the Titans, so I'll draw like little like cutesy version of the Titans, like things like that. Nothing like comic related. And so I kind of put that out there on Twitter, and then I started following people. I started following, you know, Trick Jarrett and a bunch of other people, and I followed KYT, and I realized KYT's from Canada, and he noticed like some of my tweets, and he says, you know, draw something for me, draw something for me. You know, he sometimes has these random things he says to people. And so probably around September maybe of 2010, he started the A-Team podcast. And then so maybe a couple months in, it was probably just before Grand Prix Toronto. He was coming to Toronto, and he said, you know, again, draw something for me. So I actually did. So I sat down, like did a quick sketch of the A-Team. So it was the original, like it was just supposed to be original sketch, just like a sketch at the beginning, a simple, you know, pen drawing of the four guys. And so I did that, and I went to Grand Prix Toronto. It was the first time meeting, like, you know, random Twitter magic people for the first time. So I met KYT, I met Scotty, and they're really cool. And then they're pretty happy with what I'd done. I just gave them the piece of paper, you know, here. And then so they wanted me to color it in. So I colored it in Photoshop, and I shipped it to them. And then they started using it as their, you know, as their banner for the podcast. And that's where the relationship got started. And it wasn't until maybe like, I don't know, 4 months later that we started dawdling around, and that's another story. So at the time, I think maybe for that year, not many people know this, but I was writing for Quiet Speculation. I'd done some blog posts for MTG ColorPie, Robbie.
Love him.
Yeah, he's a super cool guy. He doesn't tweet as much these days because, you know, he's probably busy with like the family and stuff. But
Yeah, he was actually
back
on my
then,
show once and I got
oh
to
really?
meet him. Yeah, he was on my show. He was on last season. We did a show called Life of Pi and
Oh, that's awesome.
we talked about the blog, we talked about his top 100 cards and I got to meet him. I was at a SCG Seattle this year and he's a very big guy, very huggable guy. He was exactly as I imagined him, taller actually, and a very sweet guy.
No, he's a really cool guy, and I hope to meet him someday. But like, yeah, like during that time, he was really into EDH, and I was also into EDH. And he like, I was able to write a few like blog posts on his blog, and then that got me into Quiet Speculation. This is during the time when EDH was still kind of a fringe thing, where like it was rare to even see one writer about EDH, whereas these days, like it's almost obligatory to have like, you know, two commander writers writing different things on the site. So I wrote for about a year on Quiet Speculation. Then KYT comes to me and he says, you know, you should do a comic on my site. And he keeps coming. I keep like trying to put it off, you know, like I'm busy writing articles, I'll revisit the idea, I'll revisit the idea. And then he made me, you know, an offer I couldn't refuse, as I say. And so that's when we started dawdling around. So it was his idea in the very beginning, but we kind of hatched the plan together.
So now you're the first comic person that I've ever had on the show before. So I'm interested in how in your process and how you managed to keep the comic going from week to week. Now, was this your first time doing a comic or had you had experience doing that in your personal life too?
Well, I'll put this out there, you know, like I'm not like I haven't been formally trained in, you know, illustration or anything, so I draw what I like to draw pretty much, and everything I've learned is just stuff I've learned from trial and error. So I've done a few things over the years. I started like the webcomic boom was probably in, I guess, like the early 2000s, like 2001, 2002, when like Noya, Penny Arcade, and all these kind of like PvP, all these online comics coming up and becoming super popular. And there are like just tons of artists online who just want to do the same thing. They want the same level of success, and I was no different. So I started this learning to draw comics from scratch. I've been drawing for years and years, but I'd never really done a comic before, a web comic. So I started doing one, and it was in high school, and the line art was really bad, and the dialogue was super cheesy, but I love doing it. Like, you know, I probably like a very, very modest number of hits for the comic, but I learned a lot from it. You can probably like Google it. It's called Fantasy Reality. It's like fantasy slash reality. I don't know. It's a stupid name. It's a stupid story, but I learned a lot from it. It was really fun to do. And then when I went to university, I was doing work with the university paper. So in the second year, I was a columnist, and in the third year, I was doing copy editing work for them. And then I started doing a quick comic strip for them. So I did, you know, maybe a few months of that. And then I tried doing another comic after that, but, you know, it never really took off. You know, it's like it's a lot of things that you learn from trial and error again. And so all in all, like the experience I have with comics, like a lot, I've learned more from journaling around than I have from all my other experiences put together, just because I tried to put a lot more effort into this one. Because when you have to do something week in and week out, you really learn from your mistakes. You learn from the trends of like the comments and the hits. You learn which ones do well, which ones don't do so well, and you try to look at what you did right and what you could have done better. And there's so many things, like so many little details that go into making a successful comic, at least successful in my eyes, like how your dialogue is, like your script. Even if your script only has maybe, you know, 5 lines of dialogue, it's imperative that you know how it flows from one panel to the next, where you place the text bubbles so that it's the reader's eyes flow naturally from one panel to the next. Mm-hmm. Make sure everything makes sense, and then just properly building up to that punchline at the end. So with all these things that, again, I tried to learn on the fly that I never really knew before. And so on the whole, like the comic has been just a huge, huge learning experience for me.
Mm-hmm. So walk me through the process of making the comic each week. So, you know, let's start from the beginning, like where you get your inspiration from to when it actually reaches the website.
Okay, so I start on Thursday night and it has to go out on Friday midnight. No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, my eyes literally went, what?
Some, like there are probably a couple that have come that close, but I try to start it pretty early. Like I try to have the idea on the Monday of that week.
Where do you get your ideas from?
Everywhere. Just, you know, I'll go to the mothership, I'll go on Twitter, I'll look at, you know, Star City opens, like look at any articles that are coming up, just trying to see what ideas and what conversations are going on. Like sometimes it's really obvious what people are what people are talking about, whether it's a rules change or it's a new product. Like new sets are just like a gold mine. I'm just like, I'm set for the next 2 months, just because it's just so many card ideas to do. And like, you just bank them. And like, you always focus on the popular ones first, because the ones that people are talking about are the ones that you want to hit on, because this, you know, you want to strike while the iron's hot. Mm-hmm. And so I'll probably try to have an idea the Monday or the Tuesday. This is like probably the hardest part for me, is coming up with the script for the comic, because not only do you have to have the idea, you also have to frame it in a way that makes people laugh. Sure. And as I've learned, it's not always easy to make people laugh. I just try and do what I think is funny, and then if people else like it, then sure, it works.
Do you have people that you like maybe test the dialogue on to see, or is it just you sort of laughing at yourself as you're drawing? Or
yeah, like if like it's. If I like having, like, I know I've struck it when I look at the script and I chuckle to myself. Like the chuckle is the key, because after reading something so many times, like, I just don't understand why it's funny and why people like it. But if I see it, like, after, like, the fifth read and I still get a little amusement out of it, then I think I've done something right. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like my indicator. I don't think I've ever actually like shown the comic to people. That's probably a good idea. I should probably do that. This is some kind of quality control. But yeah, once I've done up the script, then everything else is easy. So I just go into Photoshop. Before, I used to, maybe for the first 30 comics, I used to actually draw it on paper by hand and then scan in the ink drawing and then clean it up and color it in Photoshop. But these days I do it all on tablet, so it's all digital these days. Mm-hmm. So I just go into Photoshop, I make, it's not one drawing, well, most, like, people who are familiar with Photoshop probably know how I do this, but it's just 4 separate drawings. So I do 4 separate drawings and then, you know, sketch them in, ink them, color them, and then shrink them down to size and put them in the 2x2 format. So it's easier for me that way, so I can fix things, you know, if things aren't quite right. And yeah, you know, from there, it's just putting in the text bubbles, making sure all the text lines up perfectly with the bubbles and everything is the way I want it to be as best as it can, and then turn to a JPEG and upload it.
Interesting. Now, how did you go from doing the comic thing to doing the alters things? I saw for a brief time you were offering alters for sale or for commission.
Yeah, I think that was probably the most... Yeah, I was probably doing alters 2011 and 2012. Mm-hmm. It started probably the tail end of 2010. I just wanted to try it. So I just, you know, I just tried on some random commons, you know, Zendikar at the time. I picked up a Bog Tatters, like, you know, I'll pick up some random paints and try this out. And it didn't turn out too poorly. So I just did a few more and they started looking decent. So I started uploading them. And then I think it was Scotty Mac, he took notice and he's like, you know, you should do some of these for me. So like, okay, I'll do a couple. And then if you like them, I'll do a few more. So then Scotty was actually the first client I had. I did, I don't know, maybe between 6 and 8 altars for him. And then after that, I started posting more and more of them, and then I got more and more business. Like, there was a large part of the clientele was local, because it just spreads through word of mouth. And people
Sure.
back then, like, it was more novelty than it is these days. And so people wanted to pick up Bunch for the EDH decks and so on, because that's when EDH was really starting to catch on. And so I started doing more and more, and yeah, I just did it for a couple of years alongside the comic. So I had some pretty busy weekends during probably a few of those months. And but these days, my activity's probably tailed off quite a bit, because I just don't have time to do the alters anymore. And you just look at some of the people who are doing alters these days, and it blows me away. Like, what people are capable of, essentially, right? You look at Eric Klug stuff, and it's like, my God, like, this is possible? Like, yeah, it's just like altering has become so huge now. It just every time I see something new there, it just blows me away.
Well, I think I speak for a lot of people. I mean, I'm looking at your alters as you're talking, you know, Dave, and I still feel like, you know, while there are people doing some pretty novel stuff out there, yours is pretty one of a kind. Like, I mean, maybe I haven't seen enough of the alter world, but, you know, I still feel like your style is pretty distinct. And I don't know, I'd like to think and speak for a lot of people when I'm kind of sad to hear you're not doing alters anymore because these are pretty cool.
Well, this is very kind of you to say, you know, and like, it was always a nice break from doing like the digital stuff to just working on paints, because I'd never really worked much with paints before. Like, I had played like Warhammer way back in the day, and that's where I learned to use like the super tiny paint brushes, and that helped me with learning how to alter cards. And yeah, you know, I like it's really weird, because I've never actually, like, aside from like the bunch that I did for practice, I've never altered a card for my own decks. Like, it's always been for other people. So I don't know, like, once you start doing it more as kind of like a business thing, where you just do it, you know, to kind of make money, and
It's not
you
fun
know,
anymore.
pretty much, yeah. I'm not gonna mince words. Yeah, it starts to lose some of its luster. So yeah.
Have you ever screwed up a card? Because I'm looking at all these cards and I'm just like, you know, there's a Liliana here, and Liliana costs about $40 to $50 now. And if somebody's giving you a card, you know, you don't want to screw up that expensive card.
Well, it's funny, if you scroll down even further, you'll probably see one or two Mind Sculptors there.
Oh, and you've never, like, I mean, is that thought ever crossing your mind where, like, don't fuck it up, don't fuck it up? I
Yeah,
mean,
like the first time I had to alter a big money card, like, it was like, you know, this could go wrong. But like with altering, like, once as long as you know what your process is, it's relatively easy to fix anything that you've messed up. Like, the only thing I could see being difficult to fix is if you use pen work on a card, because that's really hard to fix. Like,
Right.
it's pretty easy. I use acrylics and they dry, and then if something messes up, if you're careful, you can just scratch it off with like a toothpick, so it's okay. It's like the inks that are really hard to deal with. But as long as you know what you're doing, like, as long as you've done it before and you know what steps you need to take to do the card, and you know that some of these steps could be reversible, then it's generally okay. Like, once I did the first Jace, it was fine. I did another Jace, and then did a Chaos Orb, and then another Chaos Orb. So you kind of get used to it after a little while.
Your Angel of Despair is beautiful. Like, just the
That's
way the feathers wrap around, I'm literally just like, my mouth is open. Like, it
the
is gorgeous.
Yeah, Scotty loves that one.
Oh, that one's really nice. And are you still doing avatars? Because I know a certain lovely lady who wouldn't turn down an avatar.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no, I'm definitely, as you may be delighted to hear that I'm still doing avatars. And how that got started, I can't honestly say. Like, it must have started at least from the A team, where they asked me, you know, I did the first banner for the A team, then they asked me to redo it, but to do it so that I could separate each of the four guys so they could have their own image. And so they had them, and then at the time, probably I was also starting out my Facebook page for the comic. And so I had this idea where every 100 fans I would get, I would pick a random one to become Durft. It wasn't called that at the time, but it would be Durft, and then and then ask them to send me a picture, and then I Durft them, and then that'd be my way of like thanking the people for reading the comic. And so that caught on, and then I started doing them more for people on Twitter, and it just kind of snowballed, and now I have tons of people, pretty much banging on the door, and it's like I don't know how to deal with this. I didn't expect this at all. But yeah, it's been kind of a trippy thing.
Well, if you ever get around to doing my picture as an avatar, Dave, I would purposely not tell you what to do. Like, I would be like, you hear my voice, you know what I'm about. I'm gonna see what you kind of spin me out as an avatar form. I would just let you sort of run wild.
No, I love that creative freedom. There's like benefits and downsides of having like a lot of creative freedom and like only itty bitty tiny bit of creative freedom. Mm-hmm. But I can work both ways.
Well, definitely keep me in mind. My birthday's in August, so if you know.
August? All right. We'll mark that on the calendar. Which day is it?
My birthday's actually August 28th.
August 28th?
And, I would love, a Dave Lee Twitter avatar. That'd be awesome.
Okay. August 28th is in my calendar.
Awesome. But I'm sure you realize I didn't ask you here just to talk about art. You were one of the lucky 4,500 people that was able to attend GP Vegas, correct?
Yep, that was quite something.
Now you're in Canada, correct?
Yes, I live in
Toronto.
So you made
the trek from Canada to Vegas.
Yeah.
All right. So let's start by talking about your trip. What was it like just getting there?
Okay, so I had planned to go to Vegas way before they had done all the pre-registration and VIP and all that stuff, because I got a new passport last year because I'd missed the boat on a Gen Con. And so, I was like, next year I gotta make a trip because, my passport expired. I had to get a new passport and I hadn't left the country in like over 10 years. It's been, university and work. I was like stuck in this rut and I just wanted to break out of that and just go somewhere again, Mm-hmm. And so I decided to go to Vegas because, that's kind of the deep end of things. And so I planned to do that, and I finalized my plans probably, a month before, and I signed up for VIP when I was probably one of the first VIPs. I signed up in May, and that turned out to be a really good move because I didn't expect for them to have this turnout. I don't think anybody expected people to have that kind of turnout. And
now,
so,
what did being VIP get you?
A bunch of things that were really hard to find on their website. So you got free water every round. I know.
Really?
Yeah. So you had people coming around. I was like, you want free water? I was like, yeah. Cause Vegas, when I was brushing my teeth, the tap water, it tastes like plasticine. I was like, I don't really want to drink this. So bottled water was key, especially if you're just out and about, just walking out in like the Vegas weather.
Did you just say oot in a boot?
Oot in a boot.
Oot in a boot. Okay. You are Canadian. That's
certified Canadian. Just, you heard it right there. But yeah, bottle of water was key. You're guaranteed sleeves and a playmat, which is the Sword of Fire and Ice playmat, which is very, very nice looking. The vendors were buying them at 60, selling them at 100.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, it was crazy. And you also got, I think, what else did you get? Like, you had the bigger table, so they sat you probably like, I don't know, like two to a table maybe, instead of like three or four to a table.
Okay.
So you got a lot more space, which is really nice. And fixed seating, which was good, but there were some minor hiccups in implementation, because when you have 600 VIPs and 4,500 people, there is some chance where you had to move, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're paired against another VIP, then one of them had to move, right? And
So when you say fixed seating, you mean that like throughout all the rounds, you got to stay there?
In theory, yeah.
Okay.
In theory, but if you were paired against another VIP, one of you guys had to move. So you probably didn't get fixed seating for some of those rounds. And so the worst thing is that I didn't have Wi-Fi, so I couldn't check the rounds on my phone. And the pairing sheet for VIPs was the V section, which is probably like, eight tables down. And you had to, no matter what, you still had to go through the crush of people to get to that pairing sheet and come all the way back. So like fixed seating, there's a kind of a big asterisk next to it just in terms of implementation, where you didn't really have fixed VIP seating because you still had to go and check your pairings.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, someone kick you out and you'd have to go to your different table late. So that'll probably be fixed for next time. But yeah, it was there are a couple of hiccups there, but otherwise, you also got entered into a free VIP draft on the Sunday, which is an RTR block draft. And then if you won that draft, you'd be entered into a Modern Masters draft, which was for Modern Masters product, I'm assuming.
Okay.
What, is there anything else? I'm not sure if there's. I'm sure there.
Does it require? Is there more? It sounds amazing as it is.
No, it was pretty good. It was well worth the money. Like even though I totally scrubbed out, but that's fine. yeah, just anything that would make my experience easier. I was totally for, especially if there are more than 4,000 people at the event. Anything that made things easier was okay in my book. Oh yeah, and the registration. There's a horror. I can tell you about the horror story that was Friday registration.
Yes, please.
So on the morning we'd gone for breakfast, and then we met up with KYT's crew, you know, with Alex Hain and a few of the other guys from Montreal.
He has really good hair.
KYT or Hain?
Alex Hain.
Oh yeah, he's got total bangs going there.
I have this weird like word association with people. Like when I hear PBDDR, the first thing I think of is lips, and you know, when I think of Kibler, I think of things. And then, you know, when I think of Hain, I just think he's got good hair. Like that's just the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, no, right on. And they were telling us they had been to the venue. It was probably around, I don't know, 11 at that point. They'd been to the venue around 9:45, 10. They said like, yeah, the regular registration lineup, it wrapped around the building twice.
Yeah, I saw pictures of that.
It was insane. And so I was happy. I was really happy just to be VIP for that at that point, because you skipped that entire line. You still had to wait like an hour or so to get registered as a VIP, but you at least you got to wait inside. You were walking past vendors. You could look at cards while you're doing that, you know, to shoot the breeze with people. It was a lot more comfortable, I guess. But yeah, it on the whole, VIP was a very worthwhile investment.
I'm just imagining this crew of Canadians who are used to it being cold and like the 90 to 100 degrees.
Surprisingly, summers, at least in Toronto, they get pretty hot. The winters are super cold. The summers can get pretty hot. Like last year, the summers were sweltering. There was one July day where it was like 50 with the Humidex, which was, I had to walk through that for work. Let me tell you, that was not fun. But yeah.
Now I have to ask, because there were a lot of jokes going on about, you know, there's the stereotype of Magic gamers being all, you know, fat, sweaty, unkempt, you know, and people were joking about, ugh, 45, you know, sweaty guys in a room, it's going to be disgusting, you know. Can you attest to that? You know, would you say that your breathing experience was clean and fresh, or was that a problem at the event?
Actually, it was fine to me. You know,
okay.
A Friday and Saturday, it was fine to me. But Sunday, like, you know, after a couple of days, you know, just people going in and out, like, probably not as much ventilation, you know, the musk accumulates. So when we walked in Sunday, it's like, oh, we could smell it. It wasn't super terrible, but you could smell the air was just a little bit different. And I mean, that's what happens when you get like over 4,000 dudes going in and out of this place for hours at a time.
Yeah, I tend to, you know, it's funny, I tend to bring a little travel-sized deodorant with me, even when I go to, like, you know, PTQs or things like that, and I'll reapply every two or three rounds, you know, just because, you know, I don't mind being 2-7, I don't mind, you know, opening crap in my two-headed giant game, but I'm not going to be the smelly one at the event, that will not be me, and...
Well, I had a shock on the Sunday. I was like, I walk in, and it's like, oh yeah, there's a smell, and I was like, oh wait, I didn't put on deodorant today, oh no!
You're the smelly one!
It was all me. I was probably just smelling myself the entire time. I was making fun of all these people. Like, why do you all you guys smell? It's probably just me the entire time just stinking up the joint.
That reminds me of when I was at SCG Milwaukee, and I this was so funny. So SCG Milwaukee was happening. I don't remember. I think I was doing something beforehand. It was really early in the morning, and I kept hearing this buzz or this hum. And I'm looking around, I'm like, where is this hum coming from? And I'm seeing people around me like, do you guys hear that hum? And they're like, yeah, where's it coming from? And like, we're walking everywhere, we're looking, we're checking like near people's bags and stuff. And it's getting louder and louder, and more people are hearing it. And I'm asking the judge, he doesn't know where it's coming from. We're asking security, they don't know where it's coming from. And I go to sit back down, I'm like, where, you know, when I find out who's making that buzz, I'm just gonna golly. And I sit down, and my chair is vibrating.
Oh, Jesus.
And I look, and it's my phone. And it's my alarm clock that I had on vibrate.
So the alarm was just going off
Just
nonstop the
going
entire time?
off.
Oh
So
my
for the last
goodness.
30 minutes, I'm looking around going, where's this buzz? Do you guys, the buzz? Do you hear it too? And it's my dumbass buzzing for 30 minutes. Yeah. So then, and of course, everybody who knows, like, they see me looking down and they see me, and like, ah, oh, fuck. And yeah,
Like,
I.
when I find that person, I'm just gonna
Yeah.
rip their head off. Like, how could you be so inconsiderate? Turn the damn phone off.
And then people were looking at me like, bitch, crazy. Like, yeah, I've been there. I've been there. So overall, would you say that the event was run well? Because, you know, we did hear stories about the fact that there possibly weren't enough judges, you know, and things of that nature. Will you attest to it being run on okay?
Well, I was following Tim Shields' blog as the event was coming up, and from what he was writing, I felt fairly confident that he could pull it off, just because it sounded like he was prepared, that he was ready for whatever might have happened. And like the Friday, of course, how could you anticipate, like, even in the end, how could you anticipate like 4,000 people hitting the venue and
Sure.
having enough staff, and all that? Friday was probably a bit of a gong show, just having all these people waiting for hours. Like, you can't have people wait 4 hours in like Vegas sunlight to register. And like, it might have been unavoidable or could have been avoided, but it wasn't the best experience the Friday. But Saturday ran really, really well, like, all things considered. Like, it just seemed like it ran as normally as any other Grand Prix I've been to, and so I was really impressed with that.
Was it true that a lot of people dropped early?
They did have an announcement stating that, if you wanted to drop, you need to say so to make sure that the pairings weren't messed up or whatever. So there's actually a story of one of the guys that I met. He opened the nuts. Like, he and his friend, I'm gonna shout out Slick Jagger and his friend came out. He dropped the cash, came out. He was probably a little hurting for cash. He opened his pool, cracked a foil Goyf and a Ventilian Clique. So he just like dropped right away, sold all his crap, just made it like a bandit, paid for his trip. I'm assuming there are probably like a number of people who also opened similar pools and just like, I made my money from this. I don't really want or need to play like X number of rounds with X number of people. I just want to make my money and just, do whatever,
What
right?
do you think about people who did that? Would you do that?
I mean, like, I don't like I came to play at least a little bit of Modern Masters just to get a little taste of it, because I hadn't touched any of the cards prior to that point, which is probably to my detriment. But I mean, I play at least one round just to get a feel for it. It's like, unless like the only reason why I wouldn't play is time constraints or if I had to go somewhere in a hurry. But I came to Vegas partially for this main event, right? So why wouldn't I play at least one or two rounds? Do you know what I mean? Like, teach their own, but if I open the nuts pool, I'd at least like play around to just show it off,
Yeah, I mean, I would think if those cards are that great, I would think that you'd want to keep them and do something great with them, especially with how tight some of the competition was, where it's like, I was seeing a lot of the big names just dropping like flies, or, they would get so close to it, and because the record had to be so tight for them to get to day two or to get that invite, they were so close and then they were done. And, I would think if your cards could help you get there, you'd want to get there.
Like, I think it's worth it to at least, like, play a couple of rounds, like, get a feel for the format, enjoy it at least a little bit while you get your money's worth, right?
So, did you meet anybody famous or well known or through Twitter that was interesting or exciting?
I met a like there's so many people, like, I just can't remember all of their names. Like, the ones that come to mind the most are Matty Studios and Kevin Metal from the Heavy Meta podcast. Because, I've been friends with them online for quite a while. I did a guest appearance on one of their shows, and they're really cool guys. And I finally got to meet them at Vegas, and they're just as cool in real life as they are online. And they're such friendly and awesome people. I can't gush about them enough. They're just such cool guys. And just like from there, like all the fans of their podcasts, they're all a bunch of crazies, but they're awesome crazies. They know how to have a good time.
Now, Kevy's the one with the tattoos, right?
Yeah, Kevy's a rock star.
Yeah, he's the one I saw a couple pictures of through Heather, and I was just, and he looks like fun, but I took one look at him and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna need bail money if I'm within 5 feet of you, aren't I? Like,
Yeah,
so.
that guy's a handful, but he's just so one of a kind. And he's like he looks pretty edgy, but he's just so lovable, right? He's just really friendly around everyone, and you can't hate the guy. You can't hate the guy when you know him. I also met Revised Angel, Heather Meek, and she.
What a has been. Ugh.
Yeah, who talks about her these days?
Right? I mean, God, she's blonde. I mean, and ugh, she's a paramedic. I save people's lives. Ugh.
What's up
Who
with that?
cares? Right? Trash. I love her.
No, it's like it was when we like the day my buddy Ryan and I flew in because he's from Toronto as well. We go to play at the same game store. She invited us over for dinner at her house with her family, and like Adrian Reynolds was there as well. And a few vintage guys came over. We got to play a little vintage and like home cooked dinner, dogs you could play with. Like what else could you ask for? Like she was so like generous and offered such an amount of hospitality. Like it just blew me away. Blew me away.
She has so much heart to her, and I'm
Yeah,
constantly
yeah.
amazed at just how, like, just when I think I know, like, just when I think I've seen how loving she can be, she just goes and quadruples it. And yeah, she does, and she's very selfless like that, and I love that about her. And she, yeah, I appreciate that so much, and I wish I could have been there to experience that.
No, she's a really awesome person for sure.
Did you get a Deck Tees sticker?
I sure did. I still
Did
have it.
you? Awesome.
I'm not sure where I'm going to use it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm saving it for somewhere worthwhile I can put it.
Fantastic. I'm glad to hear she did that. I certainly gave out a couple of her stickers this
Awesome.
weekend.
Yeah. Who else did I meet? KYT. I always see that guy. Actually, no, I don't. I only see him like a few times a year, but. Yeah, K like if you didn't know or if anyone else didn't know, KYT and I are like are we've gotten like to be pretty good friends over the years of like the work with Man Deprived and all that stuff. I also met Helene, which I didn't get to meet, for the longest time, and she's also a really cool person.
I found her to be surprisingly intimidating
Really? Really?
because she carries herself so well, and she's very regal. That's how I would describe
Yeah,
her.
yeah.
She's very
No, I get that.
smart, and she's very refined, and I can be a little crass sometimes. And I, you know, here I am having a really. I remember the day I met her. I was playing EDH with Mike and Tifa, and you know, we were getting kind of heated. Like, I'm gonna kick your ass, Tifa. You know, and all of a sudden she walks in. I'm like, oh, I will defeat you, Tifa. Yes, that's. You know, classy. You know, we. And, you know, I just, you know, she's her, and I'm just, you know, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't saying anything stupid around Helen Bergio, and you know, and just I immediately felt sort of, you know, like trashy.
Well, if she can handle Kevi, then I'm sure, there's no problem at all.
Yeah, like I was just so worried. I kind of felt like I was playing a game of Minesweeper with her verbally. Where it's just like, just don't say anything stupid around Helen Bergio. Don't say anything stupid. And I admit that I probably didn't say very much around her, period, just 'cause I was so afraid of sounding like an idiot. But
Yeah, no, but she's surprisingly approachable for like
yeah.
just the person who's in charge of like all of organized play, Like I was talking to her about this, how like it's just in the past couple of years where all these WotC staff members are just so accessible these days. Like Mauro's on Twitter, like Aaron Forsyth, all these guys that who have such like huge stakes in the game, and yet you can just tweet at them and get in touch with them so easily. And I think it's a really cool thing that they're doing that way.
Yeah, that was something that I still really love about, you know, Wizards. Again, I came from playing WoW, and you know, a lot of the Blizzard folks were very untouchable, you know, and you did get the feeling that you were dealing with like this shadowy syndicate that, you know, didn't have a face and didn't have a name. And when you did see their faces and did, you know, hear their names, you got a lot of canned responses, or you got a lot of, you know, they just loathed having to deal with their public. And that's one thing I really love about Wizards is you can see them and you can touch them. And you know, just the other day I had an incident at my local store that I didn't think was right. And I was able to tweet Helen personally and be like, Helen,
Yeah.
you know, my store sucked. And she was like, you know, email me what happened. And I did. And, you know, and that's so crazy because normally you'd have to deal with customer service rep number 54, and, you know, you'd wait in a queue for a while and, you know, all that stuff. And you can kind of sort out, you can cut out the middleman and just go right to the source. And
No, I can totally relate to that. Like when I was playing Warhammer way back in the day, like the company that made the games, Games Workshop, they were just like the epitome of like faceless corporation just out to milk you for all you're worth. Like, they put out all these rule books, they put out all these models, but they didn't ask for any feedback from the players. And this is during the time like, social media and like the internet was becoming like this resource that the smart companies were mining, and like they still didn't get the picture. They were like, okay, we're not going to talk to you. We're just going to do whatever we want, regardless of what you're asking for. And it just really rubbed me the wrong way. And it was one of the reasons why I got out of that game, was just because like their prices kept going up, and you could never, there was no one you could go to talk to, aside from other players. And it was just, it was very, very off-putting as a gamer. And so it's something that still turned, like, rubs me the wrong way when you have a game company that's producing games for the players, and yet they don't make that effort, like even a token effort, to just solicit feedback and say, hey, what are you thinking? What do you think of this? You know?
So having been to an event that large, you know, Dave, would you go to another one like this? Like if there was another GP Vegas, or if there was another city that was attracting this many people, would you, were you pleased enough with the experience where you would go again?
I think it was just a perfect storm of factors that made Vegas what it was. And I think it's going to be really hard for them to replicate it. You know, while I say this, it'll probably be like 2 years until every GP is like 5,000 people. And I'm just, well, I was super wrong back then. But I don't know. Like, it really have to be something similar to Vegas. I'm not sure if I would go to Vegas again for Magic. You know, if I would, I do want to go back to Vegas, but I'd probably want to go for like non-Magic stuff, because there are a ton of things that I miss that I want to go back, because you really can't experience Vegas in a week. Any other city, it really have to depend on the city, like who else is going, like what artists are there, like artists are a big thing for me, what format it is, like again, it's like all these factors that have to be taken into account for me to go to a Grand Prix, because I don't really go to many Grand Prix. Like the only ones I go to, like Toronto because it's in my city, maybe like Montreal because it's a short drive away. Like this is the first one I went to that's in the States, so yeah, it'd have to be Vegas-esque, but I'm sure there'll be an event like that coming up again soon.
Yeah. Is there anything that you think in particular that Wizards should take away from this experience?
Wow. I don't know. There's probably like a pile of data that they're probably just sifting through right now. I guess in terms of logistics, like the timing could have been a little better, because this, the weekend was also the same weekend as EDC, as you may or may not know. And so you just had like thousands and thousands of ravers descending upon the city that same weekend, which raised the flight prices quite a bit. And it was also like it was starting to get a little hotter as well. You know, it was starting to hit that peak tourist season. So it didn't help the prices that much. So I guess timing could have been helped a little bit. The venue, like it's hard to find a good venue. Like the Catherine Center was fine. But again, like one of the big problems with Grand Prix is finding like a reasonably priced venue that's close to, I guess, the heart of the city, right? Like even in Toronto, like it's never in the heart of like downtown Toronto, just because there probably isn't a venue that's big enough or is reasonably priced enough. So it's always in like the greater Toronto area, which isn't really Toronto. I guess those are like kind of my sticking points. But otherwise, you know, like for an event this big that just grew and blew up and was hyped so fast and so quickly, I think it was pretty well done. I was pretty well done, and I was happy with the experience overall.
Yeah, I would have gone, if I would have gone, it would have been for the people, because I don't enjoy modern very much, and I certainly don't enjoy the heat very much. But, you know, I admit that I wasn't really interested in how people were doing. I didn't really care what people opened, but just seeing all the pictures, especially the ones that Heather took, and seeing people who'd never met each other, being able to meet each other, and just going for the convention aspect of it, and just being able to go out to dinner with certain people and see Vegas for the first time with people, I would have gone for that experience.
Yeah, that was probably the big thing, like the big reason I went, was to meet all these people, to play Magic with all these people. But like at the end of the day, I didn't really play that much Magic. I probably played about five rounds of Magic over the course of the entire weekend. Like a lot of the rest of the weekend I spent, you know, drinking and eating and getting fat, you know. And like just like meeting all these really cool people that you only see on Twitter, and like you see people's Twitter avatars, you see them tweet at you, maybe you tweet at them back. Like unless like you have a deeper relationship with these people, you don't really like, I guess, talk with them that much, because there's so many people on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
But when you see them in person, you talk to them in person, like you instantly have like a deeper connection just from meeting someone and saying, oh, you're not just words on a screen, words and pictures on a screen. You're an actual person, and now I can talk to you as a person, you know? Like, it's hard to do that when your attention is divided across so many people on tour on Twitter, and it's an online only like interaction, right?
Yeah, I get that. So while you were in GP Vegas, I was one of the people who was not there. And I actually was at SCG Philly this weekend. I flew out to visit my good friend Jen, who hosts the Genesos. She's been on my show a couple of times. She actually just wrapped up her own show because she's having a baby. She's about
Oh,
6 months
awesome.
along. Yeah, she's about 6 months along, and she decided that it would be a little difficult for her to do the mommy thing. It's her first child and, maintain a podcast, but she's still going to be on my show. So every time a new set comes out, we do a spoiler show together, and we just act like, dumb girls and geek out and have a good time. But I kind of wanted to hang out with her. I wanted to meet her to begin with because she wasn't going to be able to go to Gen Con this year. And I kind of wanted to catch her before she had the baby because I didn't want her, I'm pretty sure that she's still going to remain fun even after she has a baby. But sometimes, they turn into they join the mommy cult and they're not fun anymore. And I wanted to catch her before that happened. So I did it on a lark. I had some extra money on payday and I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just go to Philly. And she was like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I'm coming, lay out the futon. I'm there. So I went to go see her. We did a Modern Masters draft on Friday night, and I'd never drafted that before.
How did
So, girl,
that
I basically threw together a Thalid deck
go?
that wasn't very good. I had like four Thalids. I had the Germinator. I had the Elder. There's an
Yeah.
Elder that's not technically a Thalid, but it does Thalid type things. I had that. I didn't really have any removal, so it was kind of like a Simic deck-ish where I was like, I'm just going to swarm you, and if that doesn't work, I have no plans. And so it was
That
pretty
sounds quite
disastrous.
difficult.
It was fun, but needless to say, I didn't win anything. And I didn't really understand what a lot of the cards did. I didn't really understand concepts. Like, there were cards that had like split seconds, and I was just like, what is. Like I said, and then I would get lost trying to read it. They'd be, and then the pile of cards would be piling up to my right from the person passing them to me. And so I didn't really know what Storm was, and I just felt very unprepared for it, but I had a lot of fun. And then the actual open, they had about 450 people, which I consider normal. I don't really feel like attendance suffered because of Vegas at all, because we were so far on the East Coast. I think if they would have had the open in like California, you would have noticed a really big dip. But so we signed up for that. My friend Jen did drafts. I did standard. I was playing Golgari Control. My first two rounds were terrible because my opponents used a card you might be familiar with called Sigarda. And when you're playing a deck that's mostly removal and black cards, Sigarda sucks. So the first guy I played was playing junk mid-range, and that was difficult enough. And then he was like, Sigarda, and I'm like, oh, I'll just watch. That's fine. And then my second opponent was playing Bant Control, and he literally got Sigarda out on turn six. And then anything I tried to do was like dissipate, Restoration Angel, and I'm like, fuck. And that sucked. And then when I had just worked up the nerve to get a five power mutilate off or a five toughness mutilate, he's like plasma capture, and I'm like, you win. Like, so at that point I was like, okay, as long as I don't face a deck with Sigarda, I've got a pretty good chance. And then once people stopped playing her, I did okay. So the plan was originally that I was going to do the standard event, I was going to suck, and then Jen and I were going to do a two-headed giant event. And as luck would have it, after I lost the first two, I started doing really well and I started winning.
Oh
And
no.
Genesods was like, all right, it's time for two-headed giant. Are you ready? And I'm like,
It's like,
I'm 2-2. And she was actually really cool about it. She was like, sweetie, she's like, go win, make me proud. I can find another head. It's okay. And I was like, okay, are you sure? Are you really sure? I was like, I don't want you to like slam me on Twitter that I left you and you're my girl and I don't want to do this. And she was like, no. She's like, make me proud, go. So I managed to get all the way up to 6-3.
Oh, wow.
And I was really, really happy. And I was like, oh my God. And I've never won. First off, I've never played all the rounds before. I usually drop at like fifth round or so. So the fact that I had stuck it out was a big victory for me. And then that I've won six, and there were no buys or anything. I played all those rounds and I was six wins. And I was like, oh, I was so proud of myself. And I was literally like squealing and freaking out. And people were like, you might make top 64. This is awesome. And I was like, just so amazed and impressed with myself and proud of myself. And I played a nice variety of decks throughout the day. I did a little Bant Hexproof. I did a little Naya Midrange. Did a little Jund. And I managed to go the whole day without playing Aristocrats. Aristocrats is a terrible matchup for me. I have a lot of respect for that deck, but it's a very hard deck to play against. As luck would have it, my 10th round, Aristocrats.
Oh no.
So he beats me game one. Game two, I've got my sideboard figured out. I'm going to do a little Golgari charm. We're going to have some fun with this. This is going to be good. We're going to put an extra mutilate. We're going to board out the Lilianas. I've got this. Turn four, Falcon Wrath Aristocrat. And I'm like, that's okay. That's okay. I've got this. It's fine. I pass. I do nothing really special. Turn five, he draws a card. Falcon Wrath Aristocrat takes it.
Oh, jeez.
I'm still in this, though. So it's my turn. I'm like, okay, I'm still – okay, I didn't draw anything, but I'm still in this. You hear me? I'm in this. Pass the turn. He draws. Falcon Wrath Aristocrat takes 16. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
It's like, well –
I'm like, this is not cool. It's like, you just top-decked three Falcon Wraths, and I know he wasn't cheating. It was totally legit, but it was not right, and I didn't draw any Desecration Demons. I didn't draw any Mutilates. I didn't draw any Golgari Charms. I'm just like, I did everything I could have done, and it just didn't work. So I ended at 6-4.
That's still impressive.
It is.
I don't think I've ever played that many rounds and had a winning record. So, and like, I haven't played Standard in, you know, 2 years, but you know, that's something I'm definitely impressed with. I haven't accomplished something like that yet. So
yeah. So I was very proud of myself. I came in 105 at number 105 over, you know, at about 450 people. And I still felt good. Like, I was ready to go for more. Like, I wasn't feeling the fatigue at all. I don't feel like my state of mind led to my demise or anything. It wasn't like I was so tired where I misplayed. He just top decked really, really well, and I can't fault him for that, and you know, whatever. And as luck would have it, he ended up coming in exactly at number 64. Bastard. But it was a lot of fun, and I got to meet a lot of really cool people. I got to meet Amanda Stevens. I met some Twitter followers. Torian Mahler was there. And it's funny because I had some free stickers that Heather gave me, so I was handing out DeckTees stickers, and I got to meet fans of the show. Like, I had people come up to me and they were like, are you the DeckTees? And I'm like, yeah. And they were like, we love your show. And I'm like, shut up, like, whatever. And I had one guy who recognized me by voice alone. Like, he heard me talking and he came up to me and he's like, you have a really distinct voice, are you Aaron Campbell? And I'm like, yeah. And I don't go into situations thinking anybody's gonna know me. Like, I just don't have that attitude about me. I don't expect anyone to listen to my show. I have like the lowest possible expectations ever. And there were two people in particular, Katie and Matt. And they are a couple, and they love the hell out of my show. And they retweet me, and they support me, and they look forward to my show, and they get excited about my show, and they were so happy to meet me. And I was just really overwhelmed by the love that they showed me. They brought me chocolate, like a whole gift bag full of chocolate.
Oh, wow.
And I was really blown away by that because, I don't expect anybody to know who I am. And it's still really weird to me to admit that I have fans.
Yeah, it's so trippy that, you know, any, like, all the other stuff that I've done personally, like, art-wise, like, has had, like, very, very small followings, and this is, like, Dirling Around and, you know, the avatars and all that stuff. It's the first time that I've had, like, that level of exposure. Like, it's still not, like, super huge. I'm not blowing up or anything, but, like, to have people follow what I do is just, it's so weird and surreal, and to meet people in real life, like, I'm sure you can attest to this as well, like, creating something and having that touch people in real life and having that feedback, like that face-to-face feedback, is just, it's so weird.
It is. And it's definitely something I try to like wrap myself in, where it's like, you know, I would meet people. I met about 6 or 7 people who knew me that day, and they were all sort of like, they didn't quite know how to approach me. They didn't know if they should shake my hand. They didn't know. And they would just sort of stand there and they'd kind of get antsy. And I'd be like, come here, give me a hug. Like, you downloaded my show, come here, you know? And I just try to, you know, I try to be as cool about it as possible. And I still feel even weird saying the word fan, because I don't want to seem like, oh yeah, I have fans. Yeah, I'm somebody. You know, I try to keep it cool. Like, they're listeners. They're, you know, followers. But then somebody was like, well, that sounds kind of weird too. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know if fan really does them justice. You know, so
they're
I'm still trying to find
friends.
Yes. You know, and that's still so, it just blows my mind to think about. And you know, the fact that I didn't even know these people and they showed me such love and just to see the reaction that people would get. Like, I remember I was waiting by the board because they, when they would announce the pairings, it was by, so there'd be like A through C, D through F or whatever. So I was perched by the A through C board. And this guy was really quiet. I'll never forget. He was just standing there, and he's like, I saw you handing out your stickers. He's like, you're totally Aaron Campbell, right? And I'm just like, yeah. And he started blushing a little bit. He had glasses. He was a little kind of spindly guy, and he was just like, yeah. He's like, I totally love your show. And I'm like, and just to see him kind of like rock back and forth on his heels and be like, yeah, Totally know you. It's like to see that you kind of inspire the reaction people. It's just you. There's that little part of you that kind of you can't help but milk it a little bit. Like, yeah, I'm totally her, you know. And just you know what it was weird, and it was the first taste of that I've ever really had, and I definitely didn't want to lose that feeling. Like if I could have wrapped myself up in it like a blanket, I would have just sat down and been like, I'm gonna drop and just marinate in this because it feels so good. And
No, yeah, I get the feeling. Like, I think you mentioned this on your interview with TSG, but it's like, when you create something like this, like it's the feedback that you get that keeps you going, right? Like it's like with the comic, like, you know, there have been times when, you know, I've just been bogged down with like work and personal stuff, and it was like, can I do the comic this week? Should I do the comic this week? Like, should I just stop it altogether? You know, and it's just like, it's so hard to walk away from because you know that there are people out there who are kind of attached to it. And like for me, like to stop something like that, even for a week, is to let them down. It's like, oh God, like I can't let down these people who put their time into reading all this crap that I've done, right? And it's like it's knowing that there are these you have these attachments to these people through the thing that you've done, and like to stop it, you almost feel bad. Feel bad, and you're disappointing these people.
Yeah, my attitude has definitely changed since I started the show. Like, I started the deck tease just to sort of have an outlet for myself because I had just come back to the game. I didn't really have anywhere to go to talk about my first PTQ or my first two-headed giant. And it's been interesting for me to watch the change where I started doing it all for myself. And I kind of went into it with the attitude of, well, if somebody listens, that's great. And I'm going to have on the show who I want to have on, and to hell with what anyone else thinks. And, you know, I would be lying if I said that I'm really not doing this just for myself anymore. You know, it really is about, you know, like you said, you know, you think about the people who sit there and wait for your show, and they wait for that tweet to come out, or they'll troll iTunes, where's your show? And it's just not about you anymore. And
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I still do largely what I want to do, but there is that little voice in my head where even when I'm picking out an intro song, it's like, you know, are people going to hate me for making this my music? And you know, I think that's the way to go about it. I think if you're this far into something and you're still doing it 100% for you, you're kind of a little bit of a selfish person, and
Yeah.
you kind of have to let people in a little bit. And it's just I think that's the right way to do it, is just to not make it all about you anymore, you know, to do it sort of for others. And yeah.
Yeah, it's like you give up a part of yourself to like create this thing that eventually takes on a life of its own. It's like whether you're doing like a podcast or a comic or you write articles, like you're basically taking a piece of yourself and you're just putting it out there. And it's when you look at it that way, it's a scary thing. Like, the internet's not always the nicest place, right? And when you take a piece of yourself that's so personal and so a part of you, and you just throw it out there for people to consume, it can be a little trippy, I guess.
Yeah. Going back to SCG Philly, though, there was one thing I didn't like about Philly, and I guess I don't know if they're doing this at other opens or not, but they actually had security at the event giving us tags.
Oh,
So like,
really?
yeah, we had these bracelets, these paper bracelets on our wrists that had a number, and then they would also place that band around your bag, and every time you left, security would make sure the tags matched.
Is this only with Philly,
I
or
don't
like?
know. I was at SCG Milwaukee and they weren't doing this, but apparently the organizers said that because theft had become such a problem, that they were going to start instituting this now. I haven't heard about it otherwise, but it was really annoying because, as you might know, you know, you're always coming and going from the venue. And, you know, even if it was something as simple as I have to pee, it's, you know, ma'am, can we see your bracelet? It's like, but you just saw me like 2 minutes ago. Like, I don't understand. And it was even better because the woman who put my bracelet on and my tag on gave me wrong numbers.
Oh.
And there were actually quite a few people that had been through the same thing, and it got hairy for a second there, where, you know, there's this big, huge black security guard, and he's like, "Excuse me, miss, you know, can I see your stuff?" And then the minute he sees your numbers don't match, you see that light go out in his eyes, and you're like, "Shit!"
Oh,
And he's
jeez.
pulling you aside, and it's, "Why does your numbers match? You know, where did you get your bag from? Can you prove this is yours?" And it's like, you know, like if they're going to do this, at least make sure the numbers match, at least pay attention to that. And then, you know, you'd get one security person that would be a little lenient, and then you would expect them all to be lenient, and then you'd come back around and the other one's a little bit more militant. And it just wasn't a good idea in theory, and I was a little annoyed with it, and I thought that could have been handled better.
No, that's totally understandable. And then, but you look at like look at how large magic events are becoming these days, and you listen to all the horror stories of there being like entire rings of thieves, like organized like groups of thieves going in and just like just jacking decks or bags and just passing to each other, and just like it's just such as if like when magic grows more and more, like these thieves know that there's going to be, oh, there's going to be the SCG circuit, they're going to be Grand Prix, and they'll like, I'm sure they're at every single event, and it's kind of a scary thing, and I think probably a little more attention needs to be paid into like creating some kind of standardized system, I guess, or like a widely adopted system that can help curb that. Like, I didn't hear all that many horror stories in Vegas. Maybe I just didn't have my ear to the ground, but like there were some like, especially I think it was last year's Gen Con, I think, when they had all the champions, like the Legacy and the Vintage championships, where people just had like decks stolen right off their tables. Like,
What? Wow.
it's just because like you have like all these people crowding around the table like spectators, you know, and then
Yeah.
like guy turns away for a second, hand snatches in, takes a deck, and then the guy starts passing to another guy, and the guy passes deck to another guy, and then you don't know who has what anymore. So it's like
Right.
there are all these horror stories about like all this like blatant thievery, no pun intended, going on, and like it's like something needs to be done at some point, because it'll get to the point where like this becomes a very real and common threat.
Yeah, I've never experienced that, thankfully. I did meet some famous folks. I ran into Drew
Oh,
Levin, of
really?
course, who's an absolute sweetheart,
Oh,
and
awesome.
I adore him, and he's a cutie patootie. And Brad Nelson was there, Todd Anderson was there, Chris Van Meter, I believe, the very jolly looking ginger from SCG, very nice guy. I didn't expect him to have pierced ears. He had like really stretched kind of ears. That was surprising. I
Okay.
believe Brian Von Braunduin was there. I think that's
Oh,
how Brian
yeah.
Braunduin, he was there. So that was nice. I did approach Brad Nelson. I was like, Brad Nelson, you're coming on my show. And he was just like, okay. And he was a little taken aback by the sticker. He was like, what kind of show are you running here, Missy? And I'm like, it's an interview show, I promise. It's not a porn site, don't worry. And so he seemed interested, so I have to have him on at some point. And
Brad Nelson seems like a really, really friendly guy, like a really, really good, cool guy to hang around.
yeah, and I get a feeling he's somebody that I really wouldn't have to mine too deep for topics on. Like, I think he would be pretty easy to come up with. And other than that, I met, like I said, just random Twitter followers who I know, not necessarily big names, but just people I'd heard about and things like that. And Ricky Hayashi was there, the level 3-4 important judge. He was there. And then we had a judge from Switzerland, yeah, the Swiss, Kluger, Klug, something, K, Krieger, I don't know. I could have
Don't
sworn it started
ask
with a K.
me.
Very nice guy, but at first people thought he was from Sweden. And when I heard that, I was like, interesting. I was like, so does that mean we have to? I had this really great interaction with Drew Levin. Like, we thought he was from Sweden. And I was like, so does that mean we can only ask him judge questions in the form of Robin lyrics? And I was just like, you know, I would call him over and be like, I'm in the corner watching him kiss her. Oh. And then he'd reply with like a continuation of the song, and we would just have a whole magic interaction that way. That's how I fantasized it going down. And then Drew was really great. Drew chimes in with, he would just reply with, call your girlfriend. And
Well, I remember Robin.
I was like, Drew Levin, I love you. He just, without missing a beat, he was awesome. So
That sounds really cool.
yeah. So that was about it for me. I had a really good time. I think the next event I have to prep for that's standard is there's a PTQ next month, and then I will be at Gen Con in August. Will you be there?
I don't think I'll be there. I think my coffers have been depleted enough from Vegas, and I'll need to replenish some funds. I'll probably go. I'm gonna go next year. I know I missed the boat last year. I couldn't make it this year. It was not only that, because but also a wedding came up, so I'll have to go to a wedding,
Whose wedding are you
that
going
same
to?
weekend. One of my university friends. He lives in Montreal, and so I have to.
Oh.
So I'm going to make a trek out there. But definitely next year. Next year, it's I'm gonna make that concerted effort to go out.
Interesting. See, I'm going to a wedding. I'm actually going to Tifa and Mike's wedding in September, and I could still
Oh, that's
find time to go
awesome.
to Gen Con because I am dedicated. Yeah.
Right
Take notes,
on.
Stately. Take notes.
I know, I'm a terrible person.
You herped when you should have
I totally
derped.
did. That's awesome.
So, Dave, if people have liked what they've heard from you on the show or they're interested in finding out more about your art, where can people find you? How can they get in touch with you?
The easiest way to get in touch with me is probably through Twitter. It's at Durfington. You can also check out my blog, where I do random article posts. Like, I'll have a
You
couple
have a
galleries
whole
up there.
whopping 3 blog posts. You should fix that.
I know writing is really hard, even though it's one of the things I do for a living. It's really hard. So you can check that out at durfington.com. Of course, you should check out mandeprived.com, which is, you know, my home base for all the Canucks out there. And I also have Dirtling Around on Facebook, which is facebook.com/dirtlingaround. It's so hard for me to say all in multiple times. Should I pick an easier title?
That's true. That's true. I'll have to work that into the show title somehow.
Yeah.
So when you're describing it to people, you're like, you should go listen to my show. It's called
It's like I can't type this in.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, Dave. It's been awesome getting to know you.
No, thanks for having me. It's been super fun, and yeah, thanks for inviting me.
And I look forward to my avatar for my birthday.
Yeah, it'll be there. It'll be there. Don't you worry.
And if anyone listening has enjoyed what they've heard here on The Deck to Use, you can first and foremost always find me on legitmtg.com. After that, you can find me on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Feel free to like the episode, give it a couple stars and a review if you can. If you have any personal feedback for me, you can find me on Twitter at OriginalOestrus. That is OriginalOestrus. Or you can reach out to me even more directly at estrus@elitistjerks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and be good to each other, okay? Bye. We don't wanna go home.